Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Ben Harrison.
Hey, I'm the other host, Adam Pranica.
I guess we're pot committed on revealing our identities and, you know, maybe for the best.
I still have really mixed feelings about it, to be honest. We're recording all these episodes dark at this point.
Right, so we still could choose never to release this.
Yeah.
But idea of recording a podcast that you don't put out, I mean, like, recording a podcast is already a waste of time.
I guess. I guess I am putting off important paid work to do this, so... I guess I've made that choice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're doing it. We're doing it big time. So this episode is The Naked Now. It's the second episode, but it's listed as episode 3 because I guess in 1987... if you had an episode that was twice as long as normal, that had to be counted as episodes 1 and 2.
Right. Netflix has it as episode 2, though.
Yeah.
So if you're following along at home using a Netflix or another television streaming provider, your numbering nomenclature might vary.
Yeah. It's on Wikipedia as episode 3, and I have to imagine Wikipedia has the most official nomenclature as far as that goes. This is really interesting.
Yeah, this is all going to get cut out. Did you ever see the canonical original series episode that is sort of related to this? Because I hadn't, and I still haven't.
I have watched a lot of the original series, but I'm usually so bored within the first 30 seconds of the beginning of an episode that I immediately start playing with my phone. So... it may or may not have theoretically been on a TV that I was in the presence of, but I don't really have any specific memory of it.
The boredom feeling is something I felt pretty acutely as this episode kicked off. I managed to resist the use of my phone, though, throughout, because I was taking copious notes.
Yeah, yeah. If you've got a notebook, somehow that gets easier.
Right.
You know, your tower defense video game doesn't beckon you quite as much. So this is officially the sweatiest episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. The Enterprise is out looking for a science vessel called the Tsiolkovsky, I think it's pronounced.
Right. You want to give an alien race a chance to pronounce your ship's name.
Go with something that's in Cyrillic.
Right.
So it's a science ship that's studying a collapsing supergiant star, and they've kind of gone incommunicado. And the away team discovers, I guess, well, so they're kind of heading toward the ship, and they get a last transmission that sounds like a real fun time party is going on the Cholkovsky, and they said they're going to have a real blowout, and then you hear an explosion, and they find out that they've in fact blown out the hatch.
Not only did they have the literal blowout, they had a literal real chill time.
Yeah, they did have a real chill time, because the rest of the ship has been turned off, and a lot of the heat has been bled into space. So
this is another scene where the set designer takes full advantage of the fire extinguisher and just hoses down some rooms with that fogger.
I wonder if they just had a bunch of Freezum spray paint left over from season one, episode one, and they were just like, you guys got a script where we can use up the rest of this? Because we don't want it sitting around taking up space here in the prop department.
Yeah, it's real set designed by Costco. They just bought a big pallet of the stuff and decided to put it to use.
I mean, you know, it could in fact be that, like, some sort of snow flocking company was a heavy investor in the show and convinced them to buy a bunch of that stuff. But
you got to believe Riker's in his element, too. I mean, he beams over there. It's obviously the leavings of what is a thinly veiled orgy.
Yeah. I mean, everybody that's naked conveniently has enough snow on their body to conceal their naughty bits. But
right.
So anyways, they
it's probably a form of orgy that even Riker hasn't engaged in.
Right.
So you've got to believe he's curious.
Yeah, he definitely hurries back to the Enterprise, fires up the holodeck, and gets it going. Riker, program one. But the fulcrum moment here is when Geordi opens up somebody's shower and a fully clothed woman falls out into his hands, and we actually hear the sound of a disease being transmitted from her to him, which becomes the problem for the rest of the episode. And
how would you describe that sound?
It's a lot like a starship door opening or closing.
Right.
It's kind of a hiss.
It sounded like someone balling up some plastic wrap to me.
Yeah, maybe like a pitch shifted plastic wrap.
Yeah.
Crumple. And this is like, I feel like that is non-diegetic sound also, because like it happens a whole bunch of times for the rest of the episode. Every time somebody gets infected, you hear it happen. And it's pretty obvious that they can't hear it. So it's just there for the benefit of the audience.
Yeah, I mean, this has happened a couple of times. It's a real, hey, idiot viewer, try to stay along with us here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the episode might have been a little bit more fun if they hadn't beaten us over the head with that. Like, it'd be like trying to remember, oh, yeah, and, you know, Geordi touched Yar, and then Yar touched Data, you know, or whatever. But,
well, because it was a basic cable syndication, they couldn't show the disease being transmitted sexually, which I'm sure is how it was in the writer's room.
Yeah. yeah. So this disease takes the form of everybody who has it being super hot and super drunk. This is the drunkest drunk they could possibly be. It's like an extreme version of being drunk. And as Geordi like splits from the infirmary, which is already a kind of dubious plot point, because you would imagine that starships would have way better quarantine procedures in place than just like, hey, did you just come back from an away mission with a strange condition? Go ahead and walk out the door of the infirmary.
Beverly's definition of confinement to sick bay is just on a cot next to an unlocked door.
Yeah, a door that just leads right into the hallway. And to the rest of the ship. No waiting room in this sick bay.
I also thought it was curious that the first thing that a drunk Geordi does is wander into Wesley's room.
Like, yeah, this is maybe a second note of implied pedophilia in this series. But
two for two.
Yeah, and Wesley is playing with his tractor beam toy and his Jean-Luc Picard voice imitation toy, both of which he is working on for a science project, I guess.
Which are, if you were to conceive of the two most dangerous toys anyone could have on this or any other starship, it would be the device that allows you to mimic the captain.
Right.
And something that can pick up other things and move them away.
Right. So, with those toys, you know, Wesley, who is now three sheets to the wind drunk, takes over engineering. And this is an interesting moment because, you know, I always think of Geordi LaForge as being the chief engineer, but he is not yet. I think that happens in season two. And we have two characters who are like the chief and assistant chief engineers that get kind of hoodwinked out of being on duty by Wesley. The chief engineer is a woman, goes to the bridge, and the assistant chief, whose name is Shimoda, I think goes to sick bay. And Wesley uses his Picard voice imitator to announce that the ship is being taken over, and he uses his tractor beam toy to block everybody out of the section of engineering that he's hanging out in. And this quickly becomes a problem when drunk Shimoda comes back and starts goofing around with the control chips, the isolinear chips that control the warp engine, as though they are a Jenga set.
As we progress through the series, I think we need to call crew members doing things that don't really make a lot of sense to us as pulling a drunk Shimoda.
Absolutely. I guess essentially the rest of the episode is about this star that they are orbiting getting closer and closer to blowing up while the crew is more and more incapacitated by this this ailment. And, you know, every time there's a character that you would need to be on the ball, the illness finds a way of getting into them.
It's such a weird, like, we talked about this for the first episode. Like,
yeah.
It's sort of like tracking an album. Tracking an album is like choosing the order of the songs for release. I don't understand how this is episode two. Just like I don't understand how Encounter at Farpoint was the first episode. It's so weird.
It's very weird. And what I read on Wikipedia is that it is sort of a warmed over redo of a script from the original series. It was like going to be a sequel to an original series episode that would have been in some episode of the original series, but they decided to kind of rewrite it for the next generation, and the fans hated it because it was too similar. Wikipedia floats it as being one of the worst episodes of the show.
I really, like, after finishing this episode, if this were a series that began now, this show would already be on the chopping block, right?
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't, as a network, justify paying for the next episode of what we have so far watched.
Right. It's incredible. I mean, so far, the main special effects on this science fiction show are a fire extinguisher and a spray bottle of fake sweat.
Yeah. That said, though, I do like this episode a lot more than episode one.
Right.
It feels a little bit more Star Trek-y to me. And the, I don't know, there's a couple of moments that actually do kind of have a lasting impact on the series, like Data banging Tasha Yar, which
yeah, that happened early in the series. I remember, in my mind, this had happened much later in the series.
Yeah.
I didn't know this was episode two.
It's a crazy piece of character development to find out that Data is packing and is sexually attractive to Yar when she is wasted. I personally think he kind of made a mistake in having sex with her. I think that's that's a little bit rapey, maybe. But
well, she's also super mean to him when it's over.
Yeah.
Like she. I mean, she was clearly ashamed of what happened.
She definitely like initiates, but she is not really in a state of mind to be making decisions about who she's sharing her bed with.
I don't care if you are a robot or a normal crew person. I don't think there is any way that you can turn down sexy Tasha Yar, who is basically cosplaying as sexy China Phillips from Wilson Phillips.
Yeah.
Who's got like that sexy Superman curl on her forehead. That, like, what is that look about?
Yeah, they use some like clear nail polish to shellac a curl from her hair down onto her forehead.
It's kind of a lot going on there.
Yeah.
And she's, I had some pretty complex feelings about that scene.
Belly dancer outfit.
She did or did not rip off all of the scarves from Troy's apartment.
Yeah.
And evidently everyone leaves the doors to their quarters open. Like,
yeah.
Troy comes home after a shift.
It's like a suburban neighborhood where people don't lock their doors.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the way of the future. Yeah, but if you want to hold on to your scarves, I think you gotta lock your door, at least your closet door.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine, right? This is like a post-scarcity society. They don't use money. Like, how much of a concept of personal possessions do these people even have?
Are we sure that the economy isn't based almost entirely on scarves? I mean, we have this scene, and then we have the scene from the pilot episode where Beverly makes a big deal about, you know, God, the scarf would be so much more amazing if it had a gold pattern on it. And then bam, like, it seems like it has a lot more value to her in that moment.
Do you think that Steven Tyler has an economic theory that could translate to the future somehow?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I'm not going to elaborate. I'm just going to say yes.
Yeah. I think that's probably where we're at. So Data bangs Yar. At some point, Picard gets on the view screen with Wesley and kind of makes an effort to talk Wesley out of stealing the ship. And it's a pretty funny moment, and it made me think of your point that we haven't seen anything to make us not believe Picard is a pedophile.
Right.
It's the kind of
pedophile until, like, proven not pedophile. That's what my position is on Picard.
Yeah. Well, the way he talks to Wesley in this scene is like, it's the kind of like condescension that you like do when you think a kid won't realize that you're condescending to him, like,
right?
Well, Wesley, that's a very adult bit of reasoning.
Yeah, just sort of building him up a little bit to take advantage of him. Yeah,
right.
I can see that.
So, a little bit of a dark moment. Riker and the chief engineer lady are racing to get the force field down so that they can get into the section of engineering and get the ship started up again. The star is getting closer and closer to collapsing. And they finally get it down and they realize that all of these isolinear chips that control the warp engine, I guess, have been pulled out by drunk Shimoda. And it's going to take like hours to put them all back in because there's hundreds of them.
Can we get a drunk Shimoda Weird Al Yankovic song like My Sharona? Like, we gotta do that drop in this episode.
Oh yeah. should we just try and like riff a couple of bars?
Drunk Shimoda.
Yeah.
So they finally get it down. They realize that they're SOL because there's too much chips to be put back in to get them out of the way of the now exploding star in time. And they convince Data to make a game of sticking all the chips back in as fast as he can. And this is the first time that we see that Data can potentially use super speed to complete a task. And so he plugs the chips in willy-nilly. And they realize that they're still a minute away from, they're still going to be a minute short of getting out of there in time. And drunk Wesley Crusher figures out a way to reverse the polarity on the tractor beam that they have attached to the Tsiolkovsky, push it away, thereby using physics to push the Enterprise in the opposite direction, giving them just enough time to get the warp engine back online. The Enterprise is saved in the nick of time. Meanwhile, and almost exactly at the same time, the Doctor completes her remedy, which I guess she based on the remedy from the original series episode. That whole B storyline of finding the remedy is pretty funny. It's like Riker comes back and he's like, gosh, you know, I vaguely remember reading something somewhere about somebody taking a shower in their clothes. Data, why don't you look into that?
No surprise that like the bit of trivia has to do with a shower where Riker's yeah. concerned.
Yeah. I vaguely remember masturbating to the history of ships named Enterprise.
It's like the guy who comes up with acronyms to remember, you know, answers to science tests. He's like, God, I got to remember all this Starfleet trivia. And if I can only relate it to something sexual, I can pass this test.
It'll stick in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. We find out in this episode that Data is way better at Google than anybody on the Enterprise. So they save the ship, and then there's sort of the moment at the end where Tasha Yar is super cold to Data, and they have the sort of water cooler the next day moment where she says, like, that didn't happen. Don't tell anybody about it.
Yeah, like, and maybe the one most pronounced example of this show of like speaking directly to their viewer and like what their viewer sensibilities might be. Like, it's as if Tasha Yar looks directly into the camera and goes, yeah, nerd guy, like, you know what this is about. You know what this is like. Yeah. Like, you haven't been turned down in this manner many times before.
Data got friend zoned.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah.
My love is a FIFA.
So I wrote down, one of the things I wrote down while I was watching the episode was what kind of drunk each character is.
Oh, that's fun.
Would you like me to go down the list?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, Geordi LaForge, angry drunk.
Yeah.
Tasha Yar, lush.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley, reckless drunk. Engineer Shimoda is the kind of I love you man.
Yeah,
drunk.
Totally.
Troy, lush.
Yeah.
Dr. Crusher, lush.
Yeah.
Data is a funny drunk. Riker is the only one that seems he can hold his liquor, I would say.
Do you, like, that was a big question I had, was like, is Riker able to hold it together after being infected because he just has a baseline level of horniness?
I think like, so, yeah. Just throughout? Like, he's definitely hot. Like, he gets sweaty like everybody else, but he's not, like, losing
thing.
It. Yeah. And then Picard, lush. So Picard and all of the female characters are mega horny once they get infected by the alcohol syndrome, and everybody else is all of the other kinds of drunks. So
I don't know, Picard, is Picard a lush?
Yeah, man. That the way he like waves to the Doctor when she's leaving the bridge after almost getting her boobs out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those zip front uniforms are basically made for pulling out the boobs.
Yeah. Yeah. When she gets it about halfway down, doesn't quite get to sexy time. Picard basically says, like, we can't do this here.
And, did you hear his Beavis and Butthead laugh during that scene?
Yeah. That is probably as out of character as Patrick Stewart gets in the entire series.
I want that to be my ringtone.
Oh, God, would I love to show you.
Doctor, there must be a cure, some formula. Similar to the old one.
Yeah.
This is the second straight episode where Picard and Beverly demonstrate some weirdness. I think there are a few things we can assume, and then maybe one thing might be far-fetched, but like the whole Picard being a pedophile thing, we can't rule it out completely. I mean, they clearly banged.
Yeah. I mean,
the question is,
you got to wonder whether they banged during her marriage or...
Yeah, is that Is that the reason for the shame or the resistance to it? Is it? Are they so resistant because it occurred in the context of an infidelity?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's like never fully addressed, but heavily, the bush is heavily beat around, I would say.
Sure. And do we have any reason to believe that Wesley is not Picard's son?
Hairline, man.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that would be it. And also, I guess, Picard's attraction to him.
Yeah.
That would be, that'd be another factor.
Well, we don't know quite how his screws are loose sexually, so... we just know that something's up.
God, to just go, like, this is such a simplistic plot. Like, I can just imagine the writer's room having a whiteboard of just one-line plots. Like, what happens if the crew gets drunk? There's episode two.
Yeah.
Like, it's really kind of weak.
Yeah, a little bit weak. I mean, I have to say that the control chip reinsertion game is an all-time favorite Star Trek moment of mine.
Yeah.
It's something that, like when I think about Data, I think about that moment, and I think that this is, like, a unique episode for that reason. Like, it has this, like, an incredibly iconic moment for me.
I also think that that is more iconic than Data banging Yar?
Not more, no.
Okay.
You know, and when Yar turns to Data when he comes back, when she comes back to the bridge and tells him to speak a word of it to no one, that was a genuine laugh line for me. Like, I thought that was really funny. So, I mean, it's not.
I don't know. It just made me sad. It just made me real sad.
You got to think about
real
the
sad
fact,
and
though,
introspective.
That, like Data. Like, it's not even that he doesn't have an ego. Is that he just takes everything literally, without thinking about the kind of emotional dimension of it. So he's getting friend zoned, but he doesn't even know that that's like a negative place to be. He's like, okay, like, up to you.
And, do you think he was actually infected with the virus, or do you think he was sort of being Sammy Jankis about it?
I don't know. Yeah, it's real. It's real. That you have to invoke a lot of headcanon to get Data to be susceptible to the same illness as the crew.
He tries to make the case for it as if he has turned to the camera and is speaking directly to the viewer, like, "Hey, I've got blood like everyone else. I've got these pores." I don't know. That's pretty squishy logic. I mean, you could compare the ship's main computer systems to systems like that. Like, why wasn't the whole ship infected and super horny for that other ship?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a pretty epic scene with the Enterprise mounting the Tsiolkovsky and banging away on it.
What was up with the sun chunk that got thrown out towards the ships?
Yeah.
Like, is that real science?
When the star explodes, it's not like a shockwave that they're escaping. It's just like a ball of goo. And
what a piece of bad luck that is. Like,
yeah, that it's like right on the right trajectory to hit them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a raw deal.
Yeah, you think that, like, I mean, we know that, like, when the Klingon moon of Praxis blows up and it hits the Excelsior, it's just a shockwave that fucks them up. So why does it have to be like
that? Throws your tea all over the place.
Maybe they just didn't have it in the budget to do like all that computer rendering.
Wouldn't it be less work if it was a wave versus a sun chunk?
I don't know. In 1987, it's hard to know like what effects were easy to do and what effects were hard to do.
Yeah, you want a shockwave effect on a fire extinguisher budget.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
God, like, if I keep thinking about Riker and how Riker deals with the whole situation. Like, Troy lushes her way over to him in engineering, and I think this is the first and only time that she's ever called him Bill.
Yeah, Bill caught my ear as well.
Which is clearly, like, a pillow talk name.
Totally.
And like, he just with ease is able to like swing her around, pick her up, take her to sick bay, as if turning her down is just something that comes naturally to him, even when he's drunk.
For him. Yeah.
Like, yeah, do you think he's looking around at basically orgy ship and going, I've seen this 10,000 times in the holodeck. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm not even getting a softie at seeing everything that's around here. Like, this does not even move the needle for Riker.
Right. He's traveled to areas of sexuality where no man has gone before. yeah. I will say that Riker's pretty heroic in this episode. And another thing that this episode really exposes for me is that in season one, they sort of had a similar approach with the roles on the ship that they did in the original series, where it's a little bit like everybody's job can kind of change every episode. Like, you've got the doctor, the captain, Riker, and Troy have kind of firm jobs. And I guess Yar has a firm job. But like, Geordi doesn't really have a specific job. Data doesn't really have a specific job. Worf doesn't really have a specific job. Like, you see him switching sides in the bridge all the time. Like, Data is on the right side of the bridge at the beginning of the episode, and then he's on the left side. And it's like, is he an ops, or is he a con, or is it like, doesn't really fucking matter at all? Like, they like had not really thought through who any of these characters were to the ship.
Right. I mean, I think you could say they really misused Data, you know, for his entire career. Like, you could make a strong argument that he shouldn't even be on a ship. Like, he should be building
ships.
He's very
special.
Yeah, yeah.
But there, yeah, and...
Instead, he's off fucking Tasha Yar.
Mm-hmm. He's doing what we wish we were all doing.
Right. God, that China Phillips look. Jeez.
Yeah. Pretty solid.
Yeah. Tomok and Jalad and Tanagra. Moms. Can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can. And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. Folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures. You're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. And the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up. And one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Well, what's up next for the crew of the Starship Enterprise?
And by that, you mean the next episode?
Yeah. Looks like it's called Code of Honor.
I honestly don't remember much from this first season. If you were to ask me before watching at what point the whole Enterprise gets drunk episode happens, I would have said, like, in a couple of seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Yeah, but I think Yar, I mean, spoiler alert, but Yar eats it at some point in season one, I think.
Oh, that's right. She gets taken down by
the pile of poo monster.
Right. Another blue ribbon showing from the costume and set design department.
Yeah.
Look, guys, we have this big oil slick in the back of our soundstage. Like, maybe we could use it for something.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's address that later, I guess.
Yeah. When the leader of an alien culture takes a romantic interest in Lieutenant Yar, he claims her for his own, to the dismay of his own wife, who in turn challenges Tasha in a fight to the death.
Hmm. I think one funny thing about this this episode is its reception, which is being described as not as overly racist as I recalled. It's a solid C- from the Onion AV Club, so that actually might be an improvement based on the two episodes we've seen already.
How well do you remember this episode?
Not at all. How does Data feel about that?
I think I remember it. I feel like there's like a weird like jungle gym structure that they have to fight in and around, and like maybe like poison daggers get used in this episode. Yeah, do you want to invoke your veto, or do you want to see another episode that implies sexuality with Tasha Yar?
Well, the thing is, like, these seasons are like 28 episodes long, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of episodes.
So I feel
if you use it now, you could be coming off half-cocked.
Right. That's definitely not what I or Commander Riker would think to do. I think I'm going to save my veto.
I think I am too. I kind of remember liking this episode, but I'm ready to be disappointed.
You would. You've liked two straight terrible episodes so far. I've liked neither.
I'm so sorry, Adam.
This has been a terrible experience for me.
Yeah. Well, at least you get to make a podcast with your buddy Ben.
Best part.
Tune in next week for another exciting episode of The Greatest Generation. I've been Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. We'll see you next time.
Don't call, don't write.